You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. I'm pleased to say, joined for a second segment by our friend and colleague, Douglas Murray of the Henry Jackson Society. You can find his writings there and at the Spectator in London. He has also been known to contribute to other publications on this side of the pond and has been, of course, the author most recently of The Strange Death of Europe, Immigration, Identity, and Islam, which we will continue discussing with him now. Douglas, pick up where you just left off.
We've had now more than a decade of revelations of the mass rape of young women and children at the hands of gangs who are euphemistically described, when they are described at all in the British press, as Asian gangs, which implies, you know, it could be Chinese, it could be people from Hong Kong. They're almost exclusively men of Pakistani origin. And this isn't a generalization. This is a fact. Just in December, the only Muslim-run think tank that has wanted at all to look into this, and I think admirably looked into this, the think tank Quilliam, found in a report in December that 84% of so-called grooming gang offenders were South Asian, and that these people only make up 7% of the total UK population. So the majority of these offenders are of Pakistani origin with Muslim heritage. It's undeniable. And yet, even as it is undeniable, people do not even want to admit to it. Just this month, I mean, we've had famous cases, now they're famous, Rotherham, Rochdale, Oxfordshire, situations where 1,500 girls in one small town have been groomed and raped. And then this month, just a couple of weeks ago, one of them came up, the Telford case, where up to 1,000 young girls are alleged to have been raped by these Pakistani Muslim grooming gangs, rape gangs. And that caused some public concern. But 2 days ago, another case came up, yet again in Oxford. And in the Oxford case, where a group of, I think, 8 men have just been sent down to prison for this, you have to read between the lines of the story to work out this isn't some kind of, you know, Inspector Morse-style thing where I don't know, a gang of Oxford professors have been raping girls on the streets. You have to read between the lines, and then if you're really lucky, as on one of the BBC stories, you might see the photos of the convicted men. And then you work out for yourself, well, they don't look like what, you know, an Inspector Morse admirer might think. And so you've got to work it out for yourself. But then even if you do, as, for instance, Sarah Champion, the Labour MP, did last year when she mentioned the rape of girls in her own constituency in the north of England, she was sacked from the Labour front bench for identifying this very fact. So this is the crazy inferno that we're in.
Yeah. Well, and it brings me to my question, Douglas Murray. I have admired so much your courage and that of many of your colleagues at the Henry Jackson Society for speaking out about these issues and challenging the prevailing conventions and government, for that matter, with respect to the enforcement of the law, or even warning the public adequately about what's afoot. And I know you have been subjected, as have many of us on this side of the Atlantic, to a lot of calumnies and other attacks for being an Islamophobe and so on. And it seems to me that when you describe what's going on, and you have done so well now in your book, The Strange Death of Europe, it behooves all of us to be speaking up about this. How much space do you have now still in the United Kingdom to do that?
Well, this is a very pertinent question. I feel that I do, but I tell you that the thing that worries me now is the extent to which my readers, among others, do not. Let me give you an example. I wrote about a controversial case of this nature last week, and I immediately wrote about it in The Spectator, and I started afterwards to get messages from readers showing me that they had been suspended from Facebook for reposting the article I had written. so that the statement of facts in a piece by me is still for the time being able to be published, but my readers cannot republish this on social media platforms without being suspended from those platforms. And this raises what to me is a deeply, deeply concerning issue in the new age of social media, which is that the policing that was never carried out on the Hezbollah operatives, for instance, who operate on Facebook and Twitter with impunity, is instead being used and utilized to shut down the accurate reporting of actual events if they do not fit a certain multicultural narrative. And I think this is setting up a time bomb for Europe. And I, at any rate, refuse to be silenced on this. And I am just deeply concerned that my readers seem no longer to enjoy the freedom that I do.
This is such an important point, because as you know, Douglas Murray, what is happening in the United States at the moment is that the Facebooks and the Googles and the Twitters and the Amazons and so on, these IT giants, as they're called, are now insisting that they must, in deference to the laws of the European Union, apply the same sort of hate speech standards that I guess are justifying the sort of censorship, let's call it what it is, of your, you know, audience on our side of the Atlantic as well. Here where we have, you know, First Amendment freedoms, and yet they are being circumscribed. And by the way, you know, here I'm told, and I've been discussing this with some of my colleagues in our small fraternity of counter-jihadists, the effect has been that, unlike, I guess, in your case, the actual dissemination of their materials in the first place via these internet services is being restricted, often through, you know, secret algorithms and demonetization and that sort of thing. But it's nonetheless restricting them directly, as well as you know, the follow-on postings of their listeners or viewers. Do you see this happening as well in the UK or elsewhere in Europe? And what's the obvious import of all of that, Douglas?
What is being attempted is to equate people who are, for instance, Muslims who advocate violence with non-Muslims who do not. It is an attempt to equate people who, for instance, actually call for violence against individuals and murder of a certain individual with non-Muslims who do not do that, but identify unpleasant facts. So this is going on everywhere. It's going on in the US. It's going on across Europe, the UK, on social media in particular. And the really, really big problem about this, among others, is this. What do we do, going back to where we started, what do we do about the murder of a French policeman in a supermarket siege in the south of France, or the murder of an 85-year-old Holocaust survivor in her flat in Paris? What are we allowed to say that it has happened? Yes, at the moment. Are we allowed to say why it has happened? Some people are, but many others are not. So there we get into the same situation we have with the rape gang. If you are able to identify the facts, but you are only able to identify them in an upbeat fashion or in a positive way, and let's say it's quite hard to find a positive light in which to frame the mass gang rape of children. But at the moment, what we're still allowed to do is to say the 85-year-old woman's been stabbed and burned to death. The French policeman is dead. The gang rapes are going on. But just to notice them, not to draw any conclusions, and certainly not to draw any of the wrong conclusions from this. And the idea that this is a formula for societal stability is exactly wrong.
It's a formula for societal suicide, I think, is more apt. And of course, this is, I think, the point of your book, The Strange Death of Europe, is that some of this is a mortal assault on Western civilization. Some of this is a suicidal response to that mortal assault. And Douglas, just lastly, to the extent that this is now becoming the norm, how on earth does a society protect itself if it is incapable, you know, for some time, a criticism that I, among others, have leveled against our own government here in the United States has been, we've been willfully blind to the nature of this global jihadist enterprise, and it has contributed to our inability to prevail in successive campaigns against, well, various forms of this enterprise, whether it was Al-Qaeda in the first place, or the Islamic State, or the Boko Harams, and so on around the planet. But what's being described here is truly the enemy within. And if we can't acknowledge it, if we can't speak openly about it, if we can't call for corrective action, what is our future likely to be? Is there any hope for us unless we, in fact, change course?
The hope is only that individuals encourage other individuals to say no, to say that actually we have a different view of this, that we do not think that a jihadist calling for the murder of Jews or anyone else is morally equivalent to somebody who dislikes them. My own view is that, and this is my diagnosis for Europe, is that the facts will continue to happen and that people in authority may discover at some point that even if you try to stop people from noticing the facts, they will come to conclusions anyway. So that the best we can do is to keep to our principles, keep to the facts, keep believing that we should have the right to report facts.
Yeah. Douglas Murray, thank you so much for joining us, Douglas, and for the great work you do at The Spectator and elsewhere as well. Come back to us again very soon.